Welcome to the JockX podcast. My name is James O'Connor, your host, and this is where each episode I get on a great guest to share their tips, their tools, their strategies, their insights into how they got to where they are, and us as listeners can grab a hold of these tools, grab a hold of these strategies, and apply them to our own games, whether that be in sport, business, or just life in general. And I'm excited for this episode to have on from Leading Teams, Tim Ferguson, who is a partner there. And we really delve right into how to produce a high-performing team, how to produce great leadership. And that is what he's an expert, and they specialize there at Leading Teams, where they apply a model that they have been doing so for over 25 years that has produced amazing results right across Australia, all across through corporate world, into sporting, government, and they are continually doing a lot of work on a daily basis. And it was really exciting to have him in to talk a bit about his story, to talk about how they go about improving a team, and some real insights on people and books and stuff that we as listeners can get a hold of and really apply to our own workplace or our own sporting team. And it's exciting. So sit back, enjoy, and listen to episode 62 of the JockX podcast with Tim Ferguson. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you, James.
It's good to have you here, and great to really go through some leadership, high-performing teams, which you're a real professional at with Leading Teams. And I'd sort of like to start with how you got involved with Leading Teams and how it all began.
Thank you. It began not too far down the road from here, actually. I was working at the Gordon Institute of TAFE here in Geelong. Went to a leaders forum that we had at the old McCure here in Geelong that was facilitated by Leading Teams. And at that point, I really had no idea who or what Leading Teams was, but that was, you know, I guess a really important day for me. That was nearly 10 years ago now. So that day, yeah, we had a couple of facilitators from Leading Teams working with us. There were about 60 or 70 leaders, I think, in the room. And it was, that was my introduction to the whole Leading Teams model and process.
So from that point, so how long ago was that?
That was 2009, maybe even late 2008.
Okay. Yeah. And from that beginning, where did it go to from there?
So I was a client of Leading Teams for nearly 3 years. So we had a facilitator working with us. I had three different teams that I led at the Gordon. So I had sessions both with, you know, the group of leaders at the Gordon, but also with my own teams. So, yeah, facilitated sessions, working on just looking at ways we could actually do things better, which for me was a real eye-opener because I'd never really had feedback in the way that... you get the opportunity to receive as a part of the Leading Teams program. So it was a bit of a change in the way I looked at how I led.
Yep. And obviously once you've been through that program, obviously got to the point where you thought you wanted to take it further and do it professionally as you do today.
Yeah. I built a good relationship with Craig Bitherscombe, who was our facilitator. And we used to catch up for coffee pretty regularly, talk about what was happening in my teams. And I became really interested in what he did. I really admired the way that he was able to facilitate a group, was able to, you know, get us having conversations that we didn't have normally. I guess I was also struck by the simplicity of the Leading Teams model. It was just so simple, but yet something that I think most teams don't do, and that's really just having open and honest dialogue, talking about the things that you need to talk about. And I saw the power of it, you know, the performance of the teams I was involved with improved significantly. So yeah, I developed an interest in doing that, and after being a client for, as I said, about 2.5 years, Craig invited me to to come into the business, and I've been there for 6 years now.
Yeah, and it's what you obviously do on a day-to-day basis now, and you're a partner there as well, obviously, now. And what have you sort of seen between from yourself? What have you seen your biggest improvements over the last sort of, or 10 years, I guess, from that initial conversation to now?
Well, I guess the first thing is facilitation. I mean, we strive to be the world's best facilitators. I went into leading teams having really no facilitation skills, so it was a really steep learning curve for me. Yeah. In terms of being a leader, which, you know, I am a partner at leading teams, and I'm part of the leadership group. Our leadership group is voted on by the team, so it's got nothing to do with your actual position in the org chart. So as a leader, I'm constantly learning. I think that's one of the great things about being a part of the leading teams program and being a part of the team, is that you're constantly getting feedback about how you're operating as a leader. So I think going back to the days when I was at the Gordon, I think I had a sense that I was a reasonable leader. And I was doing some things that I thought were working well. But, you know, I think having the opportunity to get the feedback sort of makes you understand that every day is different, every situation is different, and you can always find ways to do things better.
Yeah.
So it's both, I think, for me as a leader, but also, you know, learning to be a facilitator. Ray McLean, who started our business, does a lot of the training. We invest a lot of time and effort in facilitation training. And so, you know, even 6 years in, I still think of myself as sort of learning facilitation.
Yeah, okay.
And something, you know, I can still get a lot better at.
Yeah. Well, going back to, I guess, the origins of the leading teams, and obviously Ray McLean started that, you could just give us a bit of run through how that all came about and how Ray got that going at the beginning.
Yeah, well, Ray was a teacher in Country Victoria. He decided to leave teaching, and this is a long story I'll cut short.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah, so he went into the Air Force as an education and training officer, looking at how some of the air crews trained. And what he found was that the technical side of the training, although, you know, really similar with each flight crew, the way the crews performed was actually significantly different. And that was down to how the group interacted, or the dynamic, what we call the dynamics of their crews. And that was really down to, you know, the strength of relationships between crew members, the ability of the leader to actually be open to feedback. You know, in the Air Force and in the military style system, it's more a top-down approach. So less likely for teams to be giving leaders feedback. It's more, you know, do what you're told, and that's how it works. So Ray sort of developed the model that we use on the back of that work.
Yep.
And I think he realised it probably wasn't going to work as well as it could in that military style of org chart management. So he started, and he has a great passion for sport. Grew up, you know, in country towns, always involved in sporting clubs. And so he started to apply that model to sporting clubs. And the first one was Central Districts in South Australia, which is north of Adelaide, and had some great success there. So from there, Ray returned to Victoria and started, I guess, looking at ways to implement the model with, firstly, sporting organisations, but then into corporate organisations. So going back probably 10, 12 years, a lot of the work we did was with elite sporting teams. So most of the AFL clubs have implemented our program at some point. But over the last 10 years, it's been a significant shift into the corporate world. So we're doing much more work in corporates now.
Yeah. And obviously your work personally is with corporates as well. Is that obviously a area that's obviously the biggest growth for the business in terms of the ability to work with a number of, you know, obviously companies compared to limited elite teams across the country?
Yeah, the market in corporate Australia, you know, in the corporate world is obviously much bigger. And we've just found the same principles apply. You know, if you've got a group of people who need to work together for some sort of common purpose, we believe the same principles of how, you know, what level of trust we have with each other, how we can actually have conversations and give feedback to, and really just to review performance. We think that the highest performance teams actually review their performance regularly.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily just about reviewing the KPIs or budgets or, you know, how we complete a project. It's more the behaviour that sits behind it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're doing, I think, probably 85% of our work now is with, you know, with businesses, small, medium, large, but we do still have that presence in elite sport.
So with your, obviously with the model you use to help teams go from, say, mediocre to a really good team performing well, obviously some of the key components, you sort of mentioned feedback, really watching the behaviours and sort of building what they want to become. Mm-hmm. They sort of, like you said, sort of a simple model, but if it's really applied well, that's where the results sort of come from.
Yeah, look, I guess the first thing when we're talking to organisations, we need to be able to, you know, or a CEO, we need to get a sense of their appetite for improvement. Because ultimately what we focus on is improved performance, whether the team in their own mind, and we don't make the assessment, is a mediocre team or a reasonable team or a really good team.
Yeah.
It really is about their appetite to find ways to do things better. And if that exists, it's then about, I guess, being clear, as I said, about the purpose. What is the purpose of the team? Why do they exist?
Yep.
And we then look to sort of to identify, well, what sort of environment do they want to create for themselves, for their people, for their team members? And it's really this then shaping that environment or culture into just a simple set of agreed behaviours.
Yeah.
So most organisations we encounter, they'll have values, corporate values, you know, integrity, innovation, customers first, they're the standard ones.
Yep,
you see.
Yep.
Values are probably more about intent, whereas behaviour is about what we do, it's about action. So we're looking to get a team to actually develop an agreed behavioural framework, which they then use, or we help them use, as a review tool.
Yeah.
Importantly, to be able to use it as a review tool, you also need to have those relationships or enough trust in the group that, you know, when we start to do stuff in the workplace, we can review it. And we believe basically anything you can do, it can be reviewed. So it's the clear purpose, a set of agreed behaviours, work on relationships and building trust, and then it's really just about many different ways to review, to give feedback, to identify things on an ongoing basis that you can do to improve performance.
Yeah, and where do you find most groups or teams find it most challenging within this whole process?
It's probably hard to say generally, but I mean, each team is different, but generally speaking, where it starts to get more challenging is when teams are under pressure. And that's, generally speaking, the true test of behaviour. You know, when things are going well, it's easy to review because we're going well and we could recognise the things that are going well. But when things start to go a little bit sour, you know, whether we've had a bad month or, you know, there's a particular performance issue we need to address, that's the real test for teams.
Yeah.
You know, when things are going not as well as we'd like, are we then committed to having the conversation?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I was speaking of going well. Like, I don't know if you saw the game on Wednesday, or the Anzac Day game. I'm obviously a Bombers fan, but Brendan Goddard he got some real criticism for his, I guess, feedback, if you like. What was your sort of take on how he went about that? And if you were, say, working with that team, what would you be sort of advising or trying to work from there with that situation?
Yeah, well, I guess first I have to admit I didn't see the Anzac game because I was actually on a plane to Brisbane. I was with a client up there on Thursday, but I did hear something about it on the radio on the way back, and I gather that was sort of he was fairly demonstrative with a teammate on the field.
Yes.
Yeah, look, and again, without seeing it, I guess for me it's very hard to judge not knowing that situation, but certainly I think giving feedback is really highly dependent on the level of trust between people. So even if a player is sort of you know, you'd suggest that sometimes that feedback would be better given in the change room out of out of the view of the public.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that if those players have a really high level of trust, that the feedback could be given in that moment and it'd be okay. We see feedback, and we think feedback is a skill. And the one thing we know about skills is you have to practice them.
Yes.
But we do see feedback actually delivered pretty well, but actually not received well because the person doesn't necessarily trust the intent of it. I guess on the flip side to that, we've seen feedback delivered pretty poorly, and I can certainly put my hand up having done that myself.
Yep.
But if the person that you're giving feedback to knows your intent is pure, then generally they'll take it okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's less about with. You need to understand their environment.
Yeah.
You need to understand the relationship between those two players as to, you know, whether that was a good thing or not.
Yeah, and it was just interesting. It made me think of it because, like, if Essendon had won the game, I bet you, I'm sure the media, for starters, would have reviewed it a lot differently as being very strong leadership and something else. But because he lost, it's just interesting that, like you said before, you find it more sometimes when things are going bad a team rather than when it's going well. Would have just got swept on the rug and they would have been happy and walked off and got a victory. But
I think that's a really good point because elite sport's a little bit different to the workplace because you do have that the match on the weekend, or in this case in the middle of the week, that it's either a win or a loss, generally speaking. So you have in the workplace, you don't generally have that. You know, it's more an ongoing performance is ongoing. But we think that sometimes winning a game or winning consistently is a bit of it sometimes allows you to wallpaper over some cracks. And we think whether you win or lose, there's an opportunity to review.
Yep.
So with that particular, maybe that the general public would view that. Interaction differently if Essendon won the game, but for me it's more about the environment outside of the game. How are those conversations had? How is feedback delivered? What was the interaction between the players after the game? In the moment, under pressure, things like that happen, but it's more about how you manage it outside of that. So whether they won the game or lost the game for me is not necessarily that important.
Yep.
It's actually what they're doing outside of that to make sure that, those conversations, that type of feedback can be given in a way that's productive.
Yeah, for sure. I guess from that, is there some teams that you sort of look from afar and see as really high-performing teams and something you keep in mind, I guess, when you're thinking of a good team and what you want to achieve with maybe clients you're working with or anything along those lines?
Yeah, look, I guess in that world of elite sport and AFL, I mean, the Sydney Swans are a team that I actually, having never worked there myself personally, I talk to some of my corporate clients about them and their culture. Ray started working with the Swans in 2002. We still have that relationship with the Swans. And then I guess they're fairly well known for the culture that they have there, the Bloods culture. It's been written about, books in the media. And I think even for corporates or people in the corporate world who don't necessarily understand AFL, a lot of people have that sense of the understanding of the Swans culture.
Yeah.
And it is, I think they're really clear about the environment they want to create, and it doesn't really matter whether you're the newest recruit or the CEO or chairman, they all hold themselves accountable to that. So I think they're a great story from that point of view. Teams that I think the other one for me is actually the team that I'm in.
Yep.
And that is leading teams. There are about 19 or 20 of us.
Yes.
One of our agreed behaviours is living our model, and that's what we do. So everything we do with our clients, we do ourselves.
Yep.
Our leadership group, as I alluded to earlier, is elected based on living our own behaviours. And we review our performance, give each other feedback regularly. So for me, I feel privileged to actually be a facilitator doing what I'm doing, but I'm also, massively proud to be in the team I'm in.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we are perfect in terms of our performance. We muck it up just as often as any team I work with. But,
yeah,
you know, we have the ability just to bounce back pretty quickly. And because we're reviewing constantly and we have that level of trust that we can, if we have an issue, we address it.
Yeah, okay, that's really cool. And from that, I guess, taking down to an individual leaders you look from afar as people you admire, and why would that be?
Yeah, I guess the first one I'd actually have to say is my father. He's having a sporting background, I guess, as a kid, and he was always the one that helped me out just in terms of, you know, advice and doing the right thing. And I guess one of the things I think really is really important is putting the team before yourself, and that was a big one that, you know, Dad always instilled into me. So I had Dad staying with us in the last week, and I've got some notes that he wrote on a piece of paper when I was made a captain of cricket team that I was in Canberra back in the under 15s, and he wrote these notes for me about, you know, what are the important things in terms of leading a team, and
yep.
I've still got them. I showed them to him the other day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think he was a bit surprised that I still had them, but yeah, he's probably the first person I think of.
With the notes, obviously, how would they align with your current work,
I guess? Really strongly. Wow, it was about communication. It was about, you know, being respectful of, you know, other players,
yep.
respectful of opposition, about, humility, I guess. And just thinking about other people, I guess that was, yeah. So I think it aligns pretty well with the work we do
now.
Yeah.
It's a really good foundation, I guess, looking back.
I guess outside of Dad, when I think about leaders, and I did play a bit of cricket in my early days, Steve Waugh, I guess, someone that I always admire, just his, humility, but also just to the steel. For him, you know, to go through some of the stuff that he did in the way that he did, he's always a leader that I admired.
If all the people listening, in terms of sort of books and documentaries you might have in mind for them to get a hold of and have a look over and watch, what would you recommend for them?
I just finished reading 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, which I've read a couple of times, and it's just fresh in my mind. It's actually a really good, for me, a good practical insight. It's written in case study format, so you're actually in the team. It's not theoretical.
Okay.
But it's just, I think, a really good basic, and it's sort of got 5 steps in terms of, you know, what a dysfunctional team looks like, which allows you to just flip that over. Well, you know, if a team lacks trust, then the opposite of that is a team that builds strong trust. So, yeah, that's one I've read recently, I've revisited recently, that I really take a lot away from.
Yep.
It's another book called Tuesdays with Morrie.
Okay.
Which is a book, which it's actually about a guy who has a teacher, you know, in his college or university days that he's lost contact with, but he finds out he's dying from cancer. And it's really, for me, it's just it's a beautiful book. It's about legacy, and it's about, basically, Morrie is dying and knows it, and he wants to shape how he goes out. So I think we talk to teams and individual leaders a lot about legacy.
Yep.
And I think that's just a really beautiful insight into what legacy is.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are a couple. They're probably the two that are in my mind right now. Yep. I think are definitely worth a read.
Yeah. And any documentaries you might recommend, or movies even, that might be relevant for people to get a hold of?
I'm not a massive movie or documentary man, to be honest. I certainly read a lot of, you know, biographies, autobiographies, but yeah, movie wise in this space, not really. I did watch The Shawshank Redemption again recently. I know that's it seems to be the favourite movie of just about every second bike. But, it is one that I really enjoy.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Very cool. Sort of coming towards the end of this conversation, if you could put a billboard up that everyone could see and you could get a phrase or a slogan out to the world, what would you have on that billboard?
Yeah, well, you asked me that question before we kicked off, and yep. The first thing that popped into my head was a quote that I actually read when I was at university, and I think the author was a guy called Novak out of the US, but his quote was, "Desire is a purer gift than talent." And I actually told someone once that was a bit of a mantra, and I was given some feedback around my own self-talk around no talent. But I really like that quote because it sort of speaks to the ability to actually work your way through something, and that, yes. You know, you might not have the ability first and foremost to get something done, but
yeah.
If you're absolutely committed to doing it, then you'll get it done.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the one for me. Desire is a purer gift than talent.
Ah, very good. Well, that's a really great conversation, a little insight into what you do, what Leading Teams does. And, if people were to want to follow up from this, maybe get in contact with Leading Teams or do different programs. I'm obviously doing one myself, actually, which has been really, enjoyable experience, but a great learning curve.
Yeah.
What would you recommend people might look at?
Well, you can certainly find us on the internet, so leadingteams.net.au.
Yep.
We work with, I guess, the mantra from Ray from the start, and the first book that he published was "Is Any Given Team." So we work at the moment with, I think, over 150 different teams,
yep.
Different organisations, and a huge cross-section, pretty much every industry you can think of. Some
yeah.
I never heard of, but we work with... a huge variety of both teams and leaders. So yeah, if people are interested in our work, I'd suggest just jumping on to our website and maybe even grabbing one of Ray McLean's books.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll give an insight into what we do.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone.
Yep.
As I said at the start, it really does come down from a team perspective to the appetite for improvement. Not every team has that, so.
Yeah. No, I definitely recommend the books. I've read them both, and they're both, particularly Any Given Team's a good story about Ray, but there's a lot of insights you can take from that. And Teamwork, I think the other one was really a really good read as well. So definitely anyone listening, get a hold of those books. I just want to acknowledge you for coming on the show, Tim, giving you time to pop by here and sit down and sharing your insights. And I really appreciate that. And I'm sure people listening will as well. So thank you.
Thanks, James.
Cheers.
With Tim Ferguson. I really hope you got a lot out of that, and I hope you really can apply that knowledge to your workplace or to your sporting team and to your own self and your own personal development and taking your game to the next level. Tim has so much knowledge, and I'm sure if it's something you want to pursue further, then definitely get in touch with Leading Teams and they can point you in the right direction on where to go. So thanks again for listening in. Hope you enjoyed that. Got some really super guests coming up, and we're going to keep them rolling in here each month. So keep an eye out for the Jockeys podcast. Thank you very much. Have a good month, and we'll talk to you soon. Cheers. Thank you.